Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. An award-winning guaranteed Irish company. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning and you're very welcome to the show. And today it is our budget phone-in show. And welcome to the studio the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, and Minister for Public Expenditure, Jack Chambers. Thank you both for being here this morning. You, of course, delivered Budget 2026 yesterday. And over the next hour of the programme, you'll both be taking questions and calls from our listeners. And a reminder to you listening that there's still time to get in touch. The phone lines are open. We're ready to take your call. So you can call us now on 0818 715 105. 0818 715 105. And you can put your budget question directly to the minister sitting here in front of me. Now, if you'd like to send us a text message or a WhatsApp message, you can do that too. The text number is 51551. The WhatsApp number 0870 32 32 32. Let's get started. So we have Marie on the line. Good morning to you, Marie.
Good morning, Claire.
You're very welcome to the programme. What would you like to say to the ministers this morning?
My question for the minister is, Claire, myself and my husband have worked all our lives. My daughter, her husband and two children live with us trying to save for a mortgage. They've emptied their savings in order to go private with their child who has additional needs for assessments. We get no state help. And my question is, what has this budget done for us, the squeezed middle class?
OK, so Mr. Donoghue, would you like to take that one?
Yes, thank you, Claire. And good morning, Marie. And thank you very much for calling in. So what I would say to you and to your family is this budget is aiming to deliver three things to you that I know are needed, given all you've said. Firstly, we're trying to overall protect our economy in a budget that is at 9.4 billion euro, a big budget, at a time in which we're seeing difficulty take place around the world that could over time begin to influence us. Have an economy in which we have a large number of people at work and which we're investing in our future. Which leads on to my second point to bring that to life. What that means in the budget we have just done is, if I think of your daughter and her husband and the needs that they have, this is a budget that is delivering additional funding for services, particularly when it comes to the assessment of the need process and for children with disabilities. So, for example, it's going to provide an additional 20 million euro to help with those who are on the waiting list for assessment and further funding for children disability network teams.
They've already had to go in private now to get those assessments and therapies that they need for Marie's grandson.
Yeah.
And in recognition of that point and the needs of her grandson, it is why we are putting further funding into this area, because I know the deep difficulty and challenge that is posed by families who are looking after young boys and girls who they know they need additional support and assessment early in life. So this budget is putting further funding into that to make sure there are further personnel and staff who are able to do this really important work on your behalf.
I suppose, Marie, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but what you're saying is that everyone in your house is working. You're all out earning a crust.
We're all working, yeah.
But you don't, get
an
much
SNA.
Help. Right, she's an SNA.
No, we get no help. She's an SNA, so she's at the coalface and she sees what's happening, the amount of children coming in with no assessment. So when her little boy was starting school this year, unfortunately, even though you can see the needs he has to have the paperwork to back it up in the schools. And it was impossible. It's a 2.5 year minimum waiting list to get him assessed, which meant he would have gone through school for 2.5 years with no assessment, hoping the school would help, would step in and bridge the gap. But that didn't happen. So they had to take the decision to go privately. And even at that, there was a waiting list. They waited 9 months. Mm-hmm. To get him assessed privately.
So when it comes, when it comes to other matters, though, in the budget, Maria, are you saying that when you're working, I mean, what you see here, and we saw that all the budget calculators were retired really after yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing really to calculate, Minister, and I'm sure you would concede that.
Yeah, there's nothing for us. But there's nothing for the middle class.
But
you know,
the point you made about you all being at work, the most important thing for me is that we still have an economy and a society in which we do have everybody at work. And if I look at everything that's taking place around our country and around our economy at the moment, my honest assessment is that we cannot take that for granted and we have to be careful. And that is why in bringing forward this budget, what we are trying to do is put in place the funding and plans that preserve our economic stability and preserve the number of people at work. And I'm so conscious, Marie, that when I use the word stability and you're talking about your grandson awaiting an assessment of need, what I have to do is make the case that that stability can help with that. And that is why, as I said, in this budget now, you know, it does mean 6,000 further clinical assessments for children and their families who need this support.
Okay.
And that is what this budget is bringing forward in recognition of your need.
Marie, thank you very much for phoning in today. I'm going to move now to Gerry, who's on the line. Good morning to you, Gerry.
Good morning, Claire.
And thank you for phoning us this morning. What would you like to ask?
Well, Claire, I'm a co-owner of a small business. We employ 14 to 15 people. And I'd like to ask the Minister, what have you done specifically for the many small businesses and the many thousands of people like me in Middle Ireland are often referred to as the squeeze middle? What specifically have you done for us?
OK, well, Minister Jack Chambers, you might take that one for us.
Yeah, good morning, Jerry, and I appreciate you phoning in as well. So, look, similar to the previous caller, what we are trying to do is... obviously, what's crucial to your business is that you continue to have demand for the service or the business that you provide for your customers. And critical to that is to have an economy which is continuing to grow, and also an economy which has a level of investment in infrastructure and housing for the workers that you employ. So what we've tried to do in the budget here is create the space to really build the long-term prosperity of our economy. As Minister Donoghue said there, we are surrounded by significant international and geopolitical risk. And ultimately, it's about strengthening the services that from the taxes that you pay in terms of public services, and also ensuring that as a business, you've got better infrastructure, which enables the economy to thrive. We have made decisions. Minister Peter Burke has put significant work into, there was measures taken earlier on this year on having a more sustainable pathway, for example, to the living wage, recognising the significant increases in recent years. And so we are trying to bring more sustainability to business costs. But part of this budget is to try and is to create that environment for much greater investment in infrastructure.
I suppose, Minister, if you're a business owner who isn't going to benefit from the VAT rate reduction, that's a hard sell today, isn't it?
I acknowledge that. And look, I acknowledge that obviously the VAT reduction for our hospitality sector is a targeted measure for particular areas of elements of the business community. But we have tried to take other measures as well. The the increased research and development tax credit, for example, going from 30 to 35% will help a significant amount of Indigenous and foreign direct investment and many in the business community who are trying to scale and grow their businesses. But what we are trying to do, Gerry, is to try and bring more sustainability to overall business costs. But ultimately, we need to protect the economy, which has shown incredible resilience and strength in recent years.
Okay, well, Gerry,
without all due respect, Minister, without small industries, you won't have an economy, you know. And when you look what you're lumping on, you put the minimum wage up. Now we've got the auto enrolment, you know. Now petrol has gone up. ESB is going to go up because of the carbon tax. CAF is going to go up because of the carbon tax. So how can you sit there and say that you're trying to help small business? You're not. You're going to put us out of business soon.
Well, we've tried to. Well, we've allowed the 9%. VAT rate on gas and electricity was a significant tax expenditure.
You're just taking away with the other hand with the carbon tax. It's just taking it away.
Well, Minister Pascal Donoghue would like to talk to you as well, Gerry. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to agree what Minister Chambers said there, but to deal with your point, Gerry, and in relation to auto enrolment on the carbon tax, firstly, it is due to your efforts and the efforts of many, many listeners here today that we have an economy that is growing. And we've tried to accompany that by making decisions that will keep over time our economy stable to support your efforts. But in the point you've made there about auto enrolment, yes, there is going to be a charge in relation to that next year. But the reason for that charge is the majority of people in our country at the moment don't have adequate pension coverage for later in life. And we're, this scheme has been brought in to change that and to fix that. And there's just no point lying to you here on the radio today and saying that we can make a change like that without it creating challenges in the short term. But in the long term, a change like that, to be honest, is something that will be very good for our country in making sure that as we all get a bit older, we have adequate pensions to look after us in older age.
All right. Well, Gerry, we'll leave it there. But thanks again for phoning in. Liz is with us. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Claire. Good morning, ministers.
And
good morning, Liz.
Liz, what would you like to ask today?
I would like to ask the ministers why they didn't increase the living alone allowance from €22 per week, and even proposing that anybody who qualifies or everybody who qualifies for the living alone allowance be eligible now, today, for the fuel allowance going forward. Because I'm as cold now at 66 as I'm going to be at 70. And I'm just wondering what difference they think waiting till 70 is going to make.
Right. So this is the increase that you would get in that allowance, or the eligibility for the allowance at 70. You're not getting it now, but you are on a pension. Is that right?
Yes. And I'm getting a living alone allowance of €22 per week, mm-hmm. which in reality, a household where there's two pensions, and good luck to them. I have one pension, but to make up for that other person, I have €22.
And you're finding that things are tight, are you?
They're impossible, Claire. I mean, any bit of savings I have now, I'm eating into them on a weekly basis. And I worry about my older age and what I'm going to have. And I just think I don't know why they can't see the difficulty that we're in.
Minister Chambers.
Good morning, Liz, and appreciate you phoning in. And I know the pressure on energy costs in particular in recent years for many households. So what we've tried to do in this budget is nearly one in every €3 of what we're spending in this budget and our increase in expenditure is on social protection specifically. So the social protection package, which Minister Cleary introduces, a €2 billion package. And the significant portion of that is the increases in rates, €10 per week across the board for in terms of the state pension. And that's obviously the primary payment that the state makes to households across the country. I acknowledge the issue that you've raised relating to the living alone allowance in particular. And we did, I know there's a fuel allowance means test as well, which obviously affects people in terms of where there's wider savings and are assessed. But what we have tried to do is get the balance right between rate increases and also making targeted interventions in other areas of the social protection package. But the wider focus of the budget was to make targeted interventions and responses to support people.
Except, but Liz feels that it should have been targeted at her, you know, at people like her.
Well, that's why a significant portion of the social protection package was on a rate increase, which is universal across pensions.
That's the €10.
And then we made other targeted decisions to support families and pensioners as well. And obviously that's dependent on people's means. But look, two of the €6 billion has been focused on social protection in particular. And we've made other decisions as well. Like if you think of the tax package, the continued reduction of the VAT rate on gas and electricity is universal in its application. And look, it's one of five budgets, and we want to make further progress on social protection in the coming years. And obviously reflecting the wider pressures that families have. And I understand fully that in recent years we have had cost of living packages which have been above the overall budgetary package. And what we've tried to do, though, is to make sure everything we do is permanent, sustainable and affordable. And that's made the overall decision-making process more challenging in the context of what was available to us.
Liz, what do you think of that?
I hear a lot of talk about universal figures and billions, and they're amazing. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's cold comfort for me, excuse the pun, but it absolutely is when I see I'm getting €10 a week now. And I understand that the fuel has gone up at the pumps overnight. That won't even cover my fuel for my car going forward. Mm-hmm. I'm still worse off probably today than I was yesterday.
And just on the fuel allowance, I mean, you make a good point, and you said it earlier, you're as cold at 66 as you'll be at 70 when you're eligible for it.
Absolutely. And I'd love to know what the ministers, what's their opinion about that? Have they any idea what it's like for us who live alone? Could they name actually the challenges? Do they know what it means to try to pay our bills every week out of this one pension? Any idea? We've worked really hard. I've worked in the community and voluntary sector all my life. I couldn't afford a private pension because, as we all know, the community and voluntary sector is so lowly paid. And I just want to know, have you any clue what it's like to be us? Seriously, forget the billions and the trillions.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Talk to me in the figures that I understand.
Okay, well Pascal Donoghue would like to talk to you, Liz.
Yes, we do, Liz. Bojack and myself represent constituencies and represent communities that have so many people like you within them. And we absolutely understand the challenge that you and others are facing at the moment. And what we are trying to do is help in a way that is permanent and doesn't create more problems and difficulties or other problems and difficulties for us down the road. And
excuse me, but where do I see that every week when my pension comes into my account? You know, I love, they're beautiful words and they're beautiful words around the political table. But for us who are here at the coalface trying to live, can you just speak in normal language and tell me what I need to hear?
Well, what I'm offering is words that are honestly and genuinely offered. That by the way we are trying
Minister. I can't live on words.
But what we are trying to do is accompany that by changes, budget by budget, that are permanent, where we can tell you that we can increase your pension and increase other payments that can make a difference to you. They're not words.
Namely,
what we're trying to do is make changes and are making changes that can make a difference, though we do appreciate at a time in which we've seen prices change by so much, there will always be a case and need for us to do more. But we're, as we sit here this morning, myself and Jack, we're going to have many other callers who will be calling in, who will be making the case to us for the different needs and issues that they have. And what we are trying to do, Liz, in bringing forward our budget, is that can make a difference to all of these issues, but make a difference to them in a way that we believe is permanent and we can build on in the time ahead.
All right. Well, Liz, thank you very much for calling. And I think Liz will be expressing the view of many people who are listening to this morning who may be in a similar situation. Garvin, good morning.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for joining us this morning. What's your question? What would you like to say to the ministers?
Well, my question, I suppose, is around college fees. And I suppose it has been spoken about for the last, 12, 18 hours about the €1,000 last year has been cut, to 500, but it's made to look like we're saving something. But I have two sons in college, okay? So last year, great, we got the €1,000 off both, which meant, and we also got a €500 minimum Susie grant for both of them. So we were €1,500 quids up on both of them last year, which meant we had maybe one college fee to pay for the two.
Yes.
This year, for junior, the youngest fella, were €500 worse off, full stop. Black and white were €500 worse off. Our next son has done his degree. He now wants to do a master's. Okay? So I go into the Susie application the last day, and the Susie threshold, income threshold, for the same child as last year, he's a dependent child, with fees of over €6,500, the income threshold comes down to €64,000 from €115,000.
That's because he's doing a master's, is it?
Because he's doing a master's. But he's the same child as last year when he was in the fourth year in college. He lives at home. Our income is the same. It's going down. I'm €500 worse off with the first child. Our fuel bill has gone up. Our shopping bill has gone up. Our diesel has gone up this morning.
All right,
how come the income threshold can be halved for a child who wants to do a master's?
Yeah. Okay, well, look, we'll take that one and we'll ask Minister Jack Chambers essentially why student fees have gone up really for people since last year.
So, and thank you, Garvin. And look, I appreciate with adult children in college, it's a huge pressure on your family and in terms of the wider cost of living that you've referenced there. And I appreciate that. Part of the response to this was in the context of this budget and managing the wider economic risk, which you've heard about, and I don't want to repeat it, but it is there and it's real.
Jack, just like the last person, speak to us in normal language.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So what I'm saying is, this is the first, to be absolutely clear, the measures that were taken in the last 2 or 3 years were temporary and were one-off. And what we've done in this budget is any measure we've taken is permanent and and indefinite. So the 500 euro reduction is the first permanent reduction in third level fees for nearly 30 years. And in the interim period, college fees went up. During the high inflationary spike, they were temporarily reduced with I appreciate for you they were reduced and now it appears like an increase. But we've tried to approach this budget.
they are an increase, Jack.
But in terms of the reduction was a temporary reduction in how the budget was decided last year and in the previous year, and that was explicit at the time. I accept in the day-to-day experience of people listening and for your own situation, it obviously is a net increase. But what we've tried to do is, in addition to the other priorities in for further and higher education and the third level, Minister James Lawless has worked to obviously fund the third level sector to ensure your children get exceptional quality in the degrees that they're receiving. And so that's the balance we have to strike in the overall package.
But what is the calculation there when you're applying for a SUSE grant and you're doing a master's?
Yeah.
That your income is nearly half the threshold of that if your child is an undergraduate. What's the thinking there?
So this is just that it has always been the case that postgraduate schemes and the eligibility for any reduction in fees has always been much less than for an undergraduate degree.
And that's, I don't know whether that's something that was on your radar in this budget, but do you think that that's fair looking at that?
What I'd say to you, Garvin, look, is that we have 5 years as a government.
Jack, yeah. My son is only going to be doing one-year master's.
I appreciate
that. And our younger son is in second year. Yeah. So in 2 years' time, he'll be finished in college.
Yeah.
So I deal, and most other people in this country, deal in the here and now.
Yeah, I hear you.
Not about what's going to happen in year 4 or 5 or your term.
I know, I hear you.
And when I speak about, they're the two younger sons of 5 children.
Mm.
We've already put 3 through college. Mm. Okay, and we're a generation that we've got no free books, no free meals, no free bus.
Mm-hmm.
Now we had a little chink of light where we got a little bit of help with college fees for our last 2. And now you've just extinguished the light.
I hear you. And what I was going to say there was that what was prioritised in this budget in the context of every measure being a permanent measure was the permanent reduction of 500 euro in third level fees. What I was going to say was in obviously maybe in next year's budget consideration can be given by Minister Lawless to how, for example, he looks at income eligibility, how he looks at the other areas that he can do. And it is, for just to be clear, it is important as well that he strikes a balance between fees and the fees that students pay, but also the need to invest in third level. Mm. And it's important we have we invest in the staff that provide the tuition and the courses.
And that's a
to
choice,
people.
Is it?
But
what I'm asking you is it on your agenda to reduce fees further in the next budget?
It's in the programme for government that we'll see ongoing reductions in fees.
Investment in third level?
But in every budget, this is part of how we have to decide in every department, in every policy area, there are choices about having to obviously to invest and to put further investment into tuition, into third level, to ensure that the courses and the tuition that people receive is of an important quality. Like, we want to protect enterprise and our economy. We want to ensure that your children, Garvin, have the best education, with the best quality courses, and again, they're our future, and they're our talent who are going to fuel our economy for the future.
But they need to ensure that
the education they receive is of the high quality. So we can just focus on on fees solely, and obviously that's one element of it, but the striking the balance for Minister Lawless is to ensure that we invest in other areas as well in the context of a constraint, and there's always a constraint when you decide a budget.
Do you want to say something very briefly,
well,
Minister?
Well, I just want to agree with the point that Jack has made there. I mean, what we're into here and now as well, Garvin. Garvin, and what we're also really aware of is, you know, the five kids that you have, the grown kids who you've put through college, who you've supported in helping them grow up and give them the start in life that they need. What we also want to try and do is make sure we have an economy in which they have a good chance of being able to get a job, a good chance of being able to own a home and feel that Ireland is a country that can support them. And in order to do that, Garvin, what we do have to do is, in a budget that is very big, this is 9.4 billion euro. We've plenty of people that are criticising Jack and I for the scale of the budget that it is within that, try to get the balance right and ensure that budget by budget we can make progress, because we can't do everything in a single go.
But
thank you for calling in.
All right, thank you, Garvin. Yeah,
we've lots of people waiting. Let me finish one thing, because I have an awful lot of people,
Garvin, who are trying to get through, but go ahead.
All seven of us still live under one roof.
There you go. And that's a symptom of where we are too. Garvin, thanks very much for your call. Lots more to come after this quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1. Email todaycb@rte.ie.
And you're listening today to our budget phone-in with Minister for Finance Pascal Donoghue and Minister for Public Expenditure Jack Chambers, and they're taking your calls live in the studio. A reminder of the number to call if you'd like to put a question directly to the ministers. It's 0818 715 105, which is the number that Tom called. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Claire.
You're very welcome to the programme. What have you got to say?
Thank you. I'm a farmer who lives on the outskirts of a city, and my question to the minister and the two ministers is, how much longer do they intend to keep torturing us with the threat of this RZLT, this residential zoned land tax, which they said would not be applied to farmers, but they're making us jump through several hoops every year in order to avoid it?
Right, so you have to apply not to pay it, is that right? Or are you
paying it?
You're not paying it.
No, you couldn't pay it. You have to apply not to pay it.
Uh-huh.
And you have to comply with, you have to apply to the council, and you have to apply to Rota Nala, and you have to look for the zoning. And there's a massive rigmarole, and you have to pay people to do those things for you. And both ministers have said over the years that it is not to be applied to active farmers.
Yes.
But
to get to that point, you're saying it's costing you time and money. Minister Pascal Donoghue, do you want to take that first?
I will indeed. And good morning, Tom, and thank you for calling
in. Good morning, Pascal.
So to further explain what the residential zoned land tax is as Tom and every listener is aware, we have such challenges at the moment in building more homes and making more apartments and houses available within our country. So,
sorry, Pascal, for the interruption now.
Sure.
Sorry for the interruption.
Not at all, Tom.
We don't need you. We don't need you to explain to us what it is. We are well aware of what it is. For a farmer that it's inflicted on, it's an eviction notice. It's not that we don't want to pay it. You cannot pay it.
So,
and you and Jack and the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste on several occasions have told us that this will not be applied to active farmers. And I'm asking you now, How much longer do you intend to keep torturing us with procedures? Why can't you make it simple and say active farmers are not involved in this tax, and that I can write into the council and say my land is not available for development at the moment?
So, Tom, while I know you know what the residential zoned land tax is, in order to answer your question with everybody listening in, I did want to explain what it is and why it's in place. And the reason why it is in place is that if we have land that is zoned for in a way that we expect homes to be built on it, and the taxpayer has built for services to connect that land, we in turn want to see homes built on it. And if I look at the operation of the tax overall, Tom, and I'll come on to your dealing with your question now, we currently know there's 526 pieces of land that now have homes being built on them that I believe otherwise would not have homes been built on them in the absence of this tax. In relation to what we have done to deal with the issue that Tom is raising about farmers, firstly, if anybody is farming on land that is zoned for agricultural use, they're automatically excluded from this tax. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's farming on farming land and zoned for farming land, they don't pay this tax. But if you are in a situation where you're on farming on land and that land is zoned for other purposes, we do require people to go through a process in order for you to gain an exemption from it.
Do you think it could be
simplified? And I've extended that for a further year.
Could it be simplified?
I look at any way of simplifying it. I will. But again, I just want to be honest in making the case here today that if we are going and we all want to build more homes within our country, we have to make better use of land. What we have tried to do is exempt any agricultural land that's zoned agricultural from the tax and then put in place a procedure for people like Tom that if their land is zoned in a way in which we would normally expect homes to be built on it, that you can get an exemption. But of course, we will look at further ways in which that can be made simpler.
Tom, thank you for your call today. We've lots to get through, so I'm going to move now to Bernard. Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning, Claire. Good morning, ministers.
You're welcome.
Good morning, Bernard.
You're welcome to the programme. You're in retail, are you?
I'm in retail, footwear, and I also work for a couple of English companies as an agent. Our sector, boutiques and shoe shops, have been decimated. We've one of the highest VAT rates in Europe at 23%. A lot of people don't realise they pay €100 for a pair of shoes and 23% of it goes to the government. Also, duty on European goods, say slippers made in Spain, wellies made in Holland, they're subject to a 17% excise duty if they come through the UK. Why does our customers, and eventually it goes on to the price the consumer pays, why is our government charging us, retailers, 17% on goods that are made in Spain and Portugal initially in France just because they come through the UK?
So the excise issue, Bernard, and thank you for calling in. I would expect that is one of the consequences of what happened with Brexit. And we all wish that was different. In relation to the point there that you make about VAT, it's not so much that the government is collecting it, but I know the government is indeed collecting it, but it's then collecting it to then use to pay for the public services that our country wants us to do a better job with. So I do appreciate that VAT at 23% is at a high level, but it's a fundamental way which in turn we collect money that we need to make progress on all the other matters that I've received calls on today in relation to our skills, in relation to our health, in relation to how we pay to build more homes.
Yeah, but that's all lovely. But I mean, our sector, our employees, we didn't get 9%. Good luck to the restaurants. I mean, €4.40 for a cup of coffee in a small rural town in Ireland, and they say they can't make money. Look at the back of the Irish Times. There's new restaurants every week. There's new restaurants registering with the Restaurants Association. Good luck to the restaurants. I'm not begrudging there. But we are suffering. In your constituency a number of years ago, there was 15 shoe shops in Talbot Street. There's one now. Our sector has been decimated. You have no shops. You have no towns. You're talking about the macro situation. I'm talking about, like your other callers, the micro situation on the ground. We have to pay the same minimum wage as other hospitality sectors, whatever. And you're saying to me, it goes to the big pot. Yeah, but it goes to the big pot. But why do we have to bear a disproportionate amount to pay into that big pot?
So I do talk about the economy overall, Bernard. But when I talk about the economy, what I have in mind are small businesses like your own and people who depend on our public services. And the experience built up that when things go wrong with our economy overall, then we can't deliver against the micro, as you refer to it, that we don't have the ability to meet the needs that are there in our health service and ensure that there is a demand then for the shoes that you want to sell. And that, as a Minister for Finance with Jack, is the argument that we have to be aware of and have to make, despite the many difficulties that you and others will call in about. Okay. And I just want to again emphasise that the tax that you are paying, and I appreciate 23% is a lot for you to pay. That in turn, however, does allow us to have the money to meet many of the other needs that we have to answer questions about today.
The only thing I said, it's the consumer that pays the VAT at the end of the day, not me. We're just unpaid tax collectors, as you know, Minister. It's the consumer that has to bear the brunt of it all. So it all adds to inflation and the greater costs for consumers.
Bernard, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate you phoning us. Catherine is with us. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Clare. Thank you so much for taking
my call.
You're
very welcome. You have a question about property tax.
Yeah, I do. And I want to let the ministers know I too am speaking with a genuine and honest heart. Yeah, right. I'm speaking with regard to my father, 94 years of old, a seasoned pensioner on a state pension. He's quite worried at the moment now about this pending property tax 2006 looming, if you like. He's living in the same house for over 70 years. There should be, I honestly believe, there should be a special exemption for our pensioners in particular. And thank you, by the way, for the €10. It allowed me to buy cards to send to my grandkids who are in New Zealand, Australia and America. And thank you for that. That's very considerate of you. But going back to the property tax, it's the audacity to think that a pensioner living in their own home and paying their taxes all their lives and owning that property for 70 years plus should be succumbed to a pension of a property tax.
Well,
I mean, how dare you? Hold on a second.
Well, I want to get an answer from you, Catherine, which is really important. And I have a lot of callers who are waiting. No, not at all. And your question is a very valid one. And I know people are being asked to revalue their homes at the moment, so it's very relevant.
Yeah.
Property tax on pensioners. Minister Donoghue.
Thank you. And good morning, Catherine. And I absolutely know you're speaking with a genuine heart, as is everybody else who is calling in here today. And myself and Jack are also genuinely being honest about how we are trying to look after our country, our finances, which in turn influences you, Catherine, your father, and the challenges that you have. In relation to local property tax, there is a deferral that is in place that allows people who need it to be able to pay later in life or when the property is sold. But the local property tax that you are referring to is by and large a universal tax that in turn allows us to pay for universal public services, particularly at a local level, whether that be what happens to our roads, what happens within our libraries and the work that our local authorities do. And that is why it's a really important tax that makes a big difference to what happens within our local communities.
Mm-hmm. But a 94-year-old paying property tax when, as Catherine says, he can ill afford it and it's causing him worry.
I understand indeed, but this is why when we have made changes with regard to local property tax, which I have on a number of occasions, we've made great efforts to ensure that people's local property tax bill is not rising in line with the overall value of their home. And in different revaluations that we have done, by widening the bands and reducing the rate, we've ensured that a local property tax bill has not grown at the same rate as the property of the value of the property.
Okay.
But I appreciate for Catherine and for her dad, it is still a bill that comes in that can be difficult and is difficult for many at the end of the year, though you can pay it on a monthly basis. But in turn, it does help with the public services that we need.
Minister, sorry for interrupting, but it's exasperating listening to you. You might as well have the RTE orchestra behind you. It's a disgrace. It's not anything else. It's a disgrace. And it's disrespectful to our old age pensioners who are the foundation of this nation, who put this nation, put you guys in your seats to be called ministers and to administer this tax on our elderly people. The mark of a nation is how they look after their elderly and their young. And we are really lacking in that as a nation of Ireland. We are very, very lacking. The mark of a nation is how they look after their elderly and their young.
Okay.
And we have seen, going back to property tax. Minister, before you go on, no disrespect, of course, but I'm allowed to speak as much as you're allowed to speak. Our pensioners, you know, are hurting. They're hurting. This €10 is an insult. It would allow them to buy a Christmas card, maybe, or maybe an extra Christmas card, or, you know, it won't even allow them to buy an extra pair of shoes or whatever they might need in their toiletries or anything like that because it's so expensive. It's an audacity to think you're even throwing €10 at them.
All right. A brief response from the Minister. Catherine, I have to move on. The only reason I'm moving on is because I have so many people who want to speak to the ministers this morning, and I know you understand that. Now, you want to briefly respond.
I wasn't looking to cut across Catherine. I was just looking to answer her question, and she deserves honesty in the answer. The mark of a nation is how we look after our elderly and our young, but we do need money to be able to look after our public services, to be able to look after our hospitals, to be able to pay for what we need to do in our schools.
Okay.
And the taxes that many want me to reduce further are essential in helping us to do it. And the mark of a nation is that we can also have an economy over time that can do more to look after its society. And that's what this and other budgets are trying to do.
All right,
and I thank Catherine for calling in.
All right, Catherine, thank you very much. Tara is with us. Good morning, Tara.
Good morning, Claire. Thanks so much for having me on.
You have a question
morning,
about...
Morning, Catherine, Jack.
You're very
morning,
welcome.
Morning, Tara.
You have a question about the arts sector, is that right?
I do indeed. I'm trying to ask the ministers, how is it fair that small Irish businesses like ourselves here at Slated in the crafts and design sector are expected to pay 23% VAT, while the hospitality sector is just paying 9%. It's time for a fair, tiered VAT system, one that supports and recognises local makers, family businesses, the difference between small, locally owned enterprises and large multinational corporations. Surely not just one sector should benefit from a VAT reduction.
Okay. So Mr. Donoghue, do you want to take that? Maybe we'll hear from Jack Chambers on this as well in a moment. Go ahead.
I will indeed, Tara, and thank you very much for calling in. So firstly, from a VAT perspective, VAT law and also the role that VAT law plays within the European Union means that we're not able to change our VAT law to recognise the size of different businesses and enterprises. We do need all to pay the same. But secondly, then, with regard to VAT, if you are paying VAT because it is, an expense with regard to your supplies or your materials that you in turn need then for your art and crafts work, you are able then to claim it back as a business expense.
Well, actually, unfortunately for us, you know, most of our products are coming, you know, within Europe. You know, like that, you talk about that this is an initiative to support tourism. What's going to happen is, in a year or two time, your tourists are going to arrive in Ireland. The local craft shop will be gone. They'll look to buy Irish design. They won't be able to find Irish design. There is no support for the sector whatsoever. We don't have the lobby that the hospitality sector have.
But just again, under VAT law, for most of the time, you are in a position where you can reclaim back the VAT you've paid in relation to the supplies and materials that you need to then create your craft and create your design.
With great respect, Minister, I don't know if you've ever run a business, but unfortunately it never works that way, you know, and constantly small business is paying large VAT bills. It never levels out. When it was reduced during COVID by just 2%, it made a phenomenal difference to bring us back down to 21%.
Okay, and Minister Chambers, you get the sense from the calls this morning that people really feel that this was unfair, that one sector got this VAT cut.
Yeah, no, and thanks, Tara, and we recognise the enormous contribution your sector makes to the tourism sector, but also for within the domestic economy. I know when I was looking at this last year's Minister of Finance, I think each change in VAT is about €1 billion, and in the context of the overall tax package available, it would have been really difficult to reduce VAT universally. And as Minister Donoghue and Pascal said there, the ability to pick out a particular sector within the European Union's VAT rules is very challenging. And we are working, though, like I know there's a lot of work ongoing at a local level with the local enterprise offices there being fully funded to try and support businesses at a local level. But I appreciate the cost base is really challenging. But it is difficult in a tax package that has very limited room for manoeuvre to make such a big move on VAT at 23%.
All right, Tara, thank you very much. We have another break to take, but before we do that, I just want to talk to Anne, who's on the line. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Claire.
You're welcome to the programme. Thank you for calling us. Thank you. Would you like to say to the ministers this morning?
I just feel like we're, myself and my husband and people in our age group, are very overlooked in this budget. I'm 61 years of age, working since I was 16, as is my husband. When we were rearing our children, we didn't get any support when we paid our childcare, doctor's prescriptions, dentists, school uniforms, books, college fees. We have a mortgage still because we had to spread our mortgage longer because of the costs incurred in rearing our family. Our property tax has gone up along with utilities and groceries. We had health insurance, but we're considering cancelling it because we won't be able to afford it when we go on our pension. We didn't have a private pension because of all the costs involved in the past years. Our daughters are both in education and they're both in Australia. They can't afford to stay in Ireland. At one stage, one of my daughters, when she was 20, had to go and apply for social welfare for a couple of months. She was working at 16, supporting herself as a student, as was my other daughter. When she went to the social welfare office, she was asked to bring my husband and my payslip in, which is humiliating, and not everybody wants to share their details with their family members of their salaries. They had came back to me and told me that because they were living at home, they weren't entitled to any payments. Because they lived with us, we were expected to support them even at that age. If I lost my job in the morning and they were living with me, I wouldn't be entitled to paying for them. So in this budget, there is actually nothing for our age group, for people
like you who have worked hard, reared a family. You say you're getting nothing. Who would like to respond to that, Minister Donoghue?
So this, and thank you, Anne, for calling in. This budget overall is 9.4 billion euro. It's a really, really big budget. And next year, we're increasing the amount of money that we're spending in our country's future to 19 billion euro.
I'm going to stop you there. I've been listening to this from the start of the show. You're not referring to myself, my husband, and our colleagues and people in my age group.
Sure.
Because next year, the PRSI is going up.
Yeah.
We got no tax breaks. We got LPT going up. You may be investing in the future. My children won't be here. They're gone. And we've paid for everything to date to support everybody else that are getting all the breaks. I appreciate you want to help people with young children and you want to help people with childcare and fees and everything else. But my issue is not with any of that. And I know you want to support society and you're talking about everything that you've done for everybody else. I'm asking you what you are doing for me and people of my age group who are still working and still struggling, and we have nothing.
Okay.
We cannot claim for anything.
Minister, go ahead. There is very little for Anne in this budget.
But the only reason I was making this general point is that level of investment is about all of our futures. It's about all of our futures.
I can't see a future. My children can't see a future. It is about trying
to create a future in which, while we have 2.8 million people at work in our country, which we've never had before, create an Ireland in which Anne's children can come home and which they have a home they can live in and a job they can live in. And then just to deal with the specifics of what Anne put to me, because I don't want to conclude the call in only talking about this in national terms. You know, what does this budget contain within it? So many of the issues that Anne has raised for those who now have children in school, for those whose children are now going to college, changes have been made that Jack has outlined. But for example,
I'm delighted for them.
But in the budget that we have,
does not affect me and my future.
But
I'm going to retire in 4 years, 5 years' time.
Yes,
I have no private pension, and in the meantime, I'm trying to save money for my future, as is my husband.
So, on the other hand, what we're trying to one of the biggest reforms in pension reform, and what is being introduced in this budget with older enrolment, and that's recognising that we've hundreds of thousands of people that don't have a private pension, and this My Future Fund, which is being established, is where the state, the employer, and the employer and the employee will make that contribution to try and create pensions for people. I appreciate there's a limited time, but it will. What I would say about I accept we all know there are too many people, Irish young people in Australia and elsewhere, and part of what we're trying to do in this budget is to create the future for them where they can have a home. And that is our absolute focus, is trying to strengthen housing supply and protect our economy and ensure that we have to...
You still haven't addressed the fact that in this budget, and there is nothing for me as a taxpayer. My LPT has gone up. My groceries and utilities have gone up. I can't afford to contribute to a pension, because I'm trying to struggle and pay my bills on a day-to-day basis. I couldn't afford to save to date because I've paid for braces for my children. Everything I've done up to now, and my husband has done, we've contributed.
Can I just briefly,
because I want to go to some more callers and we're coming up close to the top of the hour.
I'm just trying to outline some specifics that are there. For example, we have included mortgage interest. We have extended mortgage interest tax relief for a further two years to try to help you with your cost of your mortgage. We have ensured that the VAT with regard to gas and electricity, which is a measure that costs many hundreds of millions of euro, that is extended. So taxation doesn't add to the cost of your energy bills going up. And they're the kind of specifics that are in place, in addition to what we are doing overall, to try to be of help to you, Anne, and to your children.
All right, we'll leave it there. We have to take a break. More callers waiting to get in after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, Louise is on the line. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Ministers. Good morning, Claire. Thanks so much for taking
me. Not at all. Delighted morning, that you phoned us. You have a question for Ministers Chambers and Donoghue. Go ahead.
Please. Yes. Ministers, to give some context to my question, myself and my husband, we both work full time. We live in Dublin. We have two small children, so we're very heavily reliant on childcare. Ministers, last year, and perhaps coincidentally ahead of the 2024 general election, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil committed to a cap in childcare of €200 per month per child. So a year later, as a family still paying nearly €1,500 per month in childcare, I suppose I have two questions. What is in the budget for my family directly relating to childcare? And my second question is, will I ever see this, in inverted commas, childcare cap initiative being implemented?
Okay. Minister Chambers, will you take that one?
Absolutely. And good morning, Louise, and appreciate the issue you're raising there. And we have tried to reinforce the investment in childcare in this budget. And as you know, the fee freeze has been in place since 2021. So Minister Foley is prioritising two things in this budget specifically for anyone who has particular childcare costs. She intends to use the overall allocation to bring down the maximum fees from next September. And there's a process that she has to undertake now. And in the spring, she'll be able to set out how the maximum fee reduction could be reduced. But secondly, on your particular question about the average and the average fee and the maximum monthly fee of €200, which you've referenced in terms of the programme for government and what was set out in the election manifestos, that is something we want to advance over a series of budgets. It's not possible to do it in one go. And what we've tried to do in this budget, it is to actually reinforce the capacity of the scheme. There'll be an additional 35,000 places paid for as part of the National Childcare Scheme, as part of core funding. So obviously with the changes we've made in recent years, we have made strides to make childcare more affordable. This government is absolutely committed, Louise, to continuing to do that. But whilst we make it more affordable, we have to ensure we've the capacity within the sector to provide the childcare that's there. Mm. And that's what Minister Foley is doing.
But there's not that bill of €1,500 is not coming down for Louise, in what you've said.
So Minister Foley has said she will be using her budget allocation to bring down the maximum fees from next September. And she'll set that out in the spring around
Minister, with the greatest of respect, next September is 2 years from when the government had committed to this.
So we've said in the programme for government it's over the lifetime of the government we want to progress that measure. And that is the case.
But children are only in early childcare, Minister, for the first 4 years of their life. So the commitment was made in 2024, but if I'm not going to see benefit until 2026, 2027, you're saying my youngest is going to be out of early childcare, so there will be no benefit to me.
So we have made huge strides. If you take over the last number of years, the overall government investment in the National Childcare Scheme is up 162% since 2019. One of the biggest interventions from the state, and rightly so, Louise, for the taxes you pay, is to support young families and their young children in childcare. And we want to do more. But like this has been an area of extraordinary investment, and that has expanded the sector. So in addition to driving affordability, that's something we want to make further progress on. We need to ensure that we build capacity in the sector. And that's what Minister Foley has to be cognizant of as well. And what's being advanced in this budget is a 9% increase overall in terms of our allocation.
I did hear, though, Minister Donoghue, you mentioned participation of women in the workforce yesterday during your budget speech. But this issue directly impacts that. People are having to make very serious choices about their careers because of the cost of childcare.
Fully understand that. And in addition to the progress that Jack has outlined that we have made on an affordability and we will make in the future, the scheme has to get bigger as well. And that's why in the decisions that he made, and they're difficult decisions, as I know, making them with him, additional funding was put into the National Childcare Scheme, which means that I think approximately 30,000 other children will be able to participate in it. And what we will do over time, though I know everybody, including you, wants us to be able to do things quicker, is try to bring more children and their families onto the scheme while budget by budget make it more affordable
okay.
too.
Louise, just to come back to you, it sounds like so many people, you'll be hanging on with your fingernails until you get them into school. Louise is gone, is she? Louise is gone. Louise, thank you very much for calling us. She's probably busy with work and with children. And that brings us to the end of our budget phone-in. Thank you very much to Minister Jack Chambers and Minister Pascal.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you very much.